KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up on this Russian Orthodox Christmas edition, the Alaska Supreme Court slaps down the sports fishing industry's attempts to ban set netting in Cook Inlet. NOAA is looking for your help in making its freezing spray forecast better and trying to rein in the barracudas of the Koyukuk. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
The Alaska State Supreme Court ruled last week an initiative to ban commercial set netting was unconstitutional. The ban was proposed to address claims of wildlife overkill by set netters. Ban supporters relied mostly on eyewitness accounts to back up their claims. KBBI's Quentin Chandler has more.
Kenai Peninsula fishermen have kept a close eye on the set net ban initiative since it was first proposed in 2013. The proposed ban would have affected urban areas across the state, but Pat Shields, a biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Commercial Fishery Division for the Upper Cook Inlet, says the ban was really targeting the east side set net fishery in Cook Inlet.
Typically, each year, about 450 set netters on the east side register their activities here.
That's 450 set netting operations that would have had to shut down if the ban were eventually approved by voters. Joe Connors is with the Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance, the group that sponsored the ban. Connors says the ban was an extreme measure the nonprofit took because no one listened to their warnings that some set netters were hurting fish stocks.
They fish intensely, they try to kill as many fish as quick as they can, and that's the problem.
In 2012, the king salmon return to the Kenai River was miserable. Connors says all fishermen contributed to the huge decline, but he blames an oversaturation of set nets for slowing the fishery's recovery. Shields Division is worried about the king population, but he wouldn't say set netters are the problem.
I can speak to that question this way. We have never failed to make the minimum escapement goal for late-run king salmon in the Kenai River since we started measuring escapements there in the early 1980s.
The escapement goal is the number of kings the department wants to return to the Kenai River to spawn. Shields says it's hard to say there is a conservation issue when that goal is continually met.
That said, we have had to take a number of restrictive actions, including closures of both sport and commercial fisheries in the most recent years during this downturn of king salmon abundance, and that's occurring all over the state.
Andy Hall, a set net fisherman and the president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association, says conservation wasn't the motivation behind the ban. He says it was just an attempt to free up more fish for sport fishermen. That is false, says Connors with the Alliance.
Why do you need more? If we're true to our cause, then we would like to see those fish get to spawn, like to see the big 70, 80, 90 pounders back. That's just all made up.
Connors doesn't know what the Alliance's next step is. They are trying to set up a meeting among the nonprofit's board members to decide. In Homer, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Heavy icing on the riggings of ships is more than an inconvenience. It's a cold weather phenomena that can capsize and sink a vessel in the blink of an eye. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is in the fourth year of a project that it hopes will fine-tune its watches and warnings about heavy freezing spray. Lieutenant Joseph Phillips is with NOAA's Ocean Prediction Center in Maryland.
We're trying to understand more about the dynamics and the atmospheric conditions and even the types of boats that might be impacted by freezing spray, because what we're learning is that freezing spray is a very difficult thing to forecast, because a lot of it does have to deal with what direction a ship is moving in, the size of the ship, the shape of the ship, the wind conditions. You could have warm water and cold temperatures and still get freezing spray.
Phillips says NOAA is seeking confirmation from mariners through field reports of spray conditions around Alaska.
Right now we're at the point where we just want to hear if there is freezing spray or not. But if you have more information, like the icing condition, the ice accretion rate, or the air temperature, or the sea conditions, wind conditions, relative humidity, all of that information is great.
He says the information that is gathered will be used to verify the forecast that NOAA issues.
Then we can start tweaking and understanding why we're not forecasting or why we're over forecasting. Maybe adjust the models that we're using here and there. And then that will eventually translate into a better forecast and a better warning system for this condition.
The same study is being done in the Northeast and on the Great Lakes, also in conjunction with Environment Canada. If you'd like to head over to their website and report your freezing spray, it's at go.usa.gov/WYBM.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
How do we keep commercial fishing permits in rural Alaska communities? That's the question folks from around the state will be gathering to discuss in Anchorage next week. Robin Samuelson of Dillingham says he thinks the two-day workshop will focus on discussing a wide range of possible solutions and some of the challenges in enacting them.
There's a lot of issues dealing with legality and regulatory tools. How do we address all them? How do we address CFAB? You know, leasing permits. Do we allow elders to lease permits that cannot fish anymore? Or do we say, no, you can't lease your permit, you need to sell it? We need to figure out how to get more younger people into the fishery. That's what we're going to be doing, is having a general discussion on the pros and cons of different suggestions.
The two-day workshop, organized by the Alaska Sea Grant Program, will be held on Tuesday and Wednesday in Anchorage at the Legislative Information Office building.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
A proposal aimed at reducing the number of pike around the northern interior village of Huslia will be considered by the Board of Fisheries when it meets next week at the Alpine Lodge in Fairbanks. As written, the proposal would allow nets with 5.5-inch mesh to be set completely across Racetrack Slough, just upriver from Huslia, as well as sloughs connected to the Huslia River. The nets would have to be removed by June 15th before the arrival of salmon to the area. Blocking off sloughs in the early summer is a traditional technique for catching large number of pike, according to the proposal's sponsor, Jack Holcheese from Huslia. But the practice has been illegal since the introduction of fishing regulations in the area in the 1950s. Olchi says the pike are an important subsistence resource in Huslia because relatively few salmon run up the Koyukuk River compared to the Yukon. But recently the pike population has grown so large that the voracious predators are making a noticeable dent in the population of other important species.
A long time ago, they used to have maybe more control of the big pike that eat all our younger fish and whitefish and ducks and muskrats and everything. And we see a lot of those younger whitefish or even sea fish and lush in the stomachs of these pikes. Actually, they're the barracuda of the Koyukuk River.
Fish and Game opposes the idea of entirely blocking sloughs to target pike. According to Yukon River fall season manager Jeff Estenson, the department is concerned about the unintentional harvest of fish other than pike.
When you are obstructing the whole entire waterway, then you are, in essence, blocking the passage of other species such as grayling, whitefish, suckers, or whatever. And even though you may be using a specific mesh size to target pike, which is the proponent suggesting in this, any kind of net is going to catch fish regardless if you want it to or not.
Current regulations for the Yukon area prevent nets from stretching more than halfway across any waterway. Huslia is in the middle of the Koyukuk National Wildlife Refuge, and federal managers have ultimate authority over fishing regulations within the refuge. The Federal Office of Subsistence Management submitted a comment in support of the proposal, though OSM recommends that a portion of a slough should be left open for navigation and some fish passage, and that large-scale pike fishing with gill nets require a permit. The Middle Yukon Fish and Game Advisory Committee also recommends that the Board of Fish adopt the proposal with certain amendments. The Fairbanks Advisory Committee is on record against the proposal.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The nonprofit cold storage plant in Petersburg is serving a wider group of customers than it did when it began operating about 10 years ago. It's still mostly freezing fish for big processors, but it's also taking in groceries and sport anglers' catches. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld tells us more.
Petersburg Community Cold Storage holds up to 500,000 pounds of product at a time, and during its decade of operation, that product has been mostly pink salmon from big processors. But that's been changing.
It's kind of expanded beyond just the idea of having seafood in there.
Liz Cabrera is coordinator of the Petersburg Economic Development Council, which owns the plant. She says it's freezing and storing fish for more small processors, as well as local businesses.
The restaurants and the grocery stores and even some of the remote lodges will bring things in, and even the canneries will store groceries there.
It's also being used more by hunters, charter operators, and sport anglers without enough freezer space. Cabrera says one person brought in a moose. Petersburg's cold storage plant continues to give priority to its anchor tenant, Ocean Beauty.
So if they get a large delivery or a large run of fish that they can't really handle at their plant, they can bring it over and freeze it and hold it at the facility. They can also do freight consolidation. So maybe they don't have a container load yet of something that they're providing to a certain market so that they can hold product until they have a full container load.
The plant, on Petersburg's waterfront, a half mile south of downtown, plays a somewhat different role for smaller seafood processors.
They'll hold frozen product there until maybe later in the season when they have time to smoke it or do some value-added processing. If they're doing custom processing work, maybe they don't have enough room in their storage areas, and so they'll bring excess over and hold it there for their customers until their customers can pick it up.
Volume and income is better this year than last. Smaller fish runs during the past fiscal year brought in gross revenues of about $125,000. July, August, and September of last year alone brought in 90% of that amount. It's representative of the ups and downs the facility has seen as the salmon catch ebbs and flows and producers close or change hands. Cabrera says overall, the operation has paid its own way.
So we kind of try to even it out on the good years and save the money for the year that we know is going to be a down year.
Petersburg Community Cold Storage construction was funded by the State Fisheries Economic Development Program and the Petersburg Economic Fund. This is Ed Schoenfeld.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And that's all for this Elvis's Birthday Week edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Quinton Chandler in Homer, KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham, KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Petersburg. From KMXD in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.